sunny on Thursday with a high near 87. Calm wind becoming west-southwest, 5 to 8 miles per hour. Monterey Bay Area boaters forecast for this evening. Southwest winds around 5 knots, rising to 10 knots after midnight. Wind waves 3 to 4 feet. KSCO News Talk Time, 8:06. Time now for Wake the Bear Radio.
Opinions expressed in the following sponsored program are not necessarily those of KSCO Radio, its staff, management, or advertisers. If something is said with which you disagree, please call us during the program in order to help us balance comments.
Welcome to Wake the Bear Radio with your host, Brandon Johnson, Chris Hurst, and Ron Powers.
Oh, all yeah. Right.
We're turning up the heat on the deep state tonight.
Talk about heat, man. Things were just melting everywhere. I had a chicken that died today.
Are you serious?
Well, it got what they call fly struck. We found about 100 maggots coming out of the egg area. And
Ron, yeah, we
dipped that thing in water 3 times, and it was doing great. This
Ron
morning.
The farmer.
Anyway, sorry about that.
Oh, well, yeah.
But life on the farm.
I mean, if you're going to mention maggots and deep state together, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's right. So nothing new. But speaking of heat.
Good recovery.
And tonight, we have a weapon of the Lord against the deep state, who's dangerous to the deep state. Ivan Ranklin, right, is on tonight.
Yes, Ranklin, yep.
Oh, man.
I can't wait. When I heard him on Red Pill 78, I'm like, oh, this guy knows his stuff. I was calling him the dot connector. He connects the dots.
He does.
I mean, just one thing after another, I'm like, wow, I didn't know that connection. So,
yeah, I'd love to hear what he has to say about Zaydin's speech last week, and that's a big hot topic right now. People are not happy about demonizing 71 million voters and who didn't vote for him.
All right. Well, let's take the next 2 minutes just to finish up what we're doing, and then we'll have them right on.
Okay.
So, what else? With the news, I mean, we had some speeches this past week, right? I mean,
we did.
Big one and a very small one. Well, no, actually,
teeny
the speeches
tiny.
Were...
It was very small.
We had two rallies, this teeny tiny rally, and that was with the Biden, the resident.
Yes.
And then we had a huge mega rally.
Wow.
A mega MAGA rally.
Mega
and
MAGA
that
rally.
Was like 10,000 people.
Ultra
filled
MAGA.
To capacity, and then much more were outside. So it's like...
Yes, and the significant thing was they were both in Pennsylvania, in the land of where our liberty began. So there were so many ways that there was signaling going on, and the signals were sent. Some of them were in words, and some of them were in sounds. There was something very unusual at the end of Trump's speech. Did you catch that?
No, tell me about it.
Well, it started thundering inside.
Yes, the same thunder soundtrack as IMQ. There's a song, IMQ. Yeah.
Really, IMQ?
Yeah. And he also played the theme song, Where We Go One, We Go All.
Wow.
So there seems to be some sort of signaling out there, some messages. At least that's how I'm interpreting it. And then with Biden, it was very clear what his messages were, that we as conservatives are just, we're danger to democracy. I mean, I had a couple clips.
Danger
I don't know
to
if
the,
I have time to do
danger
that.
To
I
the just, New World Order. Danger to the democracy. We're a danger to the deep state's vision of America.
Yeah, you're saying we promote chaos and destruction, and it's like, what was that? The summer of mostly peaceful protests.
You know?
That was not. So anyway, I don't want to spend actually any more time.
Yeah, I want to tee up Ivan, because something that Biden said in his speech, I mean, he was obviously coming down very heavy on MAGA Republicans, and he was making this connotation that there were some Republicans that he could work with that were not MAGA Republicans. Not every Republican, he said, embraces their extremism. extreme ideology. And to me, he was pointing to the Uniparty. Mm-hmm. He was obviously not just this rhino, but that there's really has been only one party. And as far as the deep state, they don't really care whether it's blue or whether it's red, as long as it's not MAGA.
Yeah.
So exactly. On that happy note, we want to introduce Ivan, and he has quite a resume. He's a recently retired Army Reserve, a lieutenant colonel. He's known General Flynn, and he has been part of military intelligence, and he's an attorney. He is a leading promoter of what's called the Pence Card Theory, and that's what's been getting out on social media for the last probably 9 months, I think, is the first time that I noticed it was posting out on Telegram and Twitter. And basically, it's Vice President Mike Pence blocked the January 6th certification by Congress, and he guaranteed Biden's victory. So he has some other things that are amazing about him. He is a Green Beret, an entrepreneur. He's a father and a husband and a former military diplomat. He's been an intel officer, and he ran for U.S. Senate as a candidate for the state of Virginia.
Virginia.
So it's probably a good thing he's not
he's
a politician.
Amen.
Well, with that, no more further ado, Ivan, you're on live. Can you hear us?
Hi. Hello, folks. Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
You sound great.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Excellent. Yeah, just a couple things I wanted to clarify on the introduction. Thanks for that introduction. Yes, all of it's correct. Just the one thing on the Pence card component. I distributed that out via Twitter in December of 2020, and President Trump retweeted that, and that's kind of how I got in the crosshairs of those that basically need some exposure and need to face consequences. Wow. Also known as the deep state, but I'm jumping in and diving in, kind of naming them by name, place, time, and transgression so that we can make sure that in the court of public opinion, we can convict them similar to what we just did in Wyoming to Lizzie, as well as one of the key witnesses before that J6 cover-up committee by the name of Rusty Bowers from Arizona, if you're aware of him. Mm. We just convicted him as well. So let's keep moving. I mean, we're on a roll.
Yeah, it looks like the Trump backed MAGA candidates are all winning with a landslide. It seems to me that speech that Zaydin gave last week was actually them shaking in their boots. That this steamrolling MAGA movement is continuing to steamroll.
I mean, we're in a precarious position right now in the country because you have probably at this point over 75% of the nation that does not consider the current Chinese Communist Party ambassador to the U.S. is currently squatting in the White House as legitimate. And you have that's probably over 75%, and then probably over 55% consider the guy sitting in the winter White House as the legitimate leader of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in this kind of dichotomous situation where we're trying to get out of this constitutional crisis, and I'm just trying to provide my, you know, theory analyses based on my background on how we correct the situation. And it's going to involve some pushback against, obviously, the Chinese influence that has burrowed itself in the big gov, big media, big tech, big pharma, etc. And then we're hopefully going to be getting out of this here in short order, hopefully at the latest January 20th of 2023. So that speech, I don't think anybody watched it. Why would you listen to somebody that is not a leader of a country? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I kind of discount that as being a speech from any consequential individual.
In your background, are you familiar with the 2015 edition of the Law of War, Department of Justice Law of War?
2015 edition of
the manual, Law of War manual. 2015 law
of
Mormon. This is the one that's the Department of Justice talking about 11-3, the occupation of a belligerent government.
Yeah, it was a Q post. They had 11.3 and 11.4. So, people are thinking they were dates at first.
But they weren't dates. They were sections of the military code.
I'm familiar with, I haven't read it in detail. I'm familiar with it, but I don't. I mean, what's your question, I guess?
Oh, I don't know. Right. It came across my mind because I was reviewing that that today. And but anyways, I encourage you to check it out. This is Brandon, by the way. I encourage you to check it out. Tell me I'd love to hear what you think about it if you get a chance to check it out.
That being said, why don't you go right into your theory?
Anytime that somebody mentions the letter after the letter P, before I even go into that, I always want people to take a look at the Phoenix field office of the FBI wrote an assessment of that particular letter of the alphabet, right? Mm-hmm. And the theory behind it. And they don't list who the individual, normally they don't do that, but I would like to know who the agents, or I should say the analysts, were that wrote that, who were the senior intelligence analysts that approved of it, and then also what evidence did they use to support their conclusion and assessment of that particular letter.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be very telling on maybe giving some context of the origin of that letter.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with no more further ado, let's just jump into the Pence card theory that you have. I was really impressed with it, and especially in some areas, it held a lot of resonance with me. So why don't you go for it?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's some people call it a theory. I mean, I think at this point, I mean, we're 18 months beyond it, but essentially it was a tweet that was sent out with an attached memo, I believe three or four pages. Yeah, I think it was four pages that Trump retweeted. And this was December 20 or 21st, I believe, or maybe 22nd. But after the Supreme Court decided not to take on a case where they should have, the Texas versus Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin case, there was really the next phase in the calendar, according to the Electoral Count Act and the U.S. Constitution as it applies to a presidential election, was Electoral Count Act, Title III U.S. Code, Section 12, I believe. And in there it said if the vice president, the president of the Senate, that is, does not receive an electoral slate from the secretary or from the states by the fourth Wednesday of December, he is to transmit a memorandum to those secretaries of state of those respective states that they did not send anything and they need to do something if they want their presidential electors to be counted. So I argued that since those states transmitted constitutionally insufficient or constitutionally violating the Constitution, how they allocated those electors, it was incumbent upon the president of the Senate to essentially acknowledge that, seeing that it violated Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2 of our federal Constitution. You know, as a federal officer, he is sworn to take an oath to defend it. And I just brought it to his attention that, hey, the states are violating that provision of the Constitution with their unlawfully transmitted electors. He needs to go ahead and act according to that Electoral Count Act. It's not that we're asking him to do it. We're just notifying him that he is obligated to do it now that he's been put on notice. And instead of acting and doing something with that and transmitting to the state stating that they violated the Constitution and giving them alternatives for it, he did nothing. And in that memorandum, it lays out three options for the states. It wasn't that Mike Pence was going to be the unilateral decider on where those electors, how they would be allocated. In the memorandum, it lists three options. One was for the states to abstain, just to kind of sit on their electors until they determine how they wanted to allocate them, if at all. Number two, they could hold a brand new election according to their state's election law rather than how the Secretary of State, a judge, or any other non-legislative entity wanted to run it in the guise of, quote, the CCP-19 bioweapon. And then the third option would be for the state legislature to hold a joint session to then determine the allocation of their electors. Now, they could have reaffirmed, if you will, the illegally transmitted Biden electors, and I would consider that, as an attorney, constitutionally viable because the legislative act essentially supersedes all of the underlying allegations of fraud, unconstitutional activity, and then all the illegal certifications. But they didn't do either. So Mike Pence didn't do anything, and the states didn't do anything. So in the collective, everybody in that chain of the presidential election just straight up violated the law. And Several attorneys recognize that, apparently to include John Eastman. Later, I found out, a year later or so, in March of this year, that apparently he considered that tweet and the memo that was in there to kind of formulate some of his arguments that he was making. I didn't really go into I didn't really research his arguments, but apparently the Mike Pence J6 cover-up committee had some interest in investigating and talking to him. And I'm not sure why they're not reaching out to me to testify, because maybe it's because I would probably devour every single one of those individuals on the committee with my ability to respond, because I've put out on Telegram in the past, and I've done it on podcasts, and I'm going to do it here on the radio station, that I will be glad to testify before that committee on private citizen Ivan Raiklin's theory advisement of the vice president on what his role was and what we need to do in order to remedy the illegally certified 2020 election. And then as part of that, we need to have several key players in that committee hearing with me as I respond to their question of why a million people showed up on January 6th. And those individuals would be, the likes of Nancy Pelosi, her sergeant-at-arms, Paul Irving, Mitch McConnell, his deputy sergeant-at-arms, since the sergeant-at-arms is deceased, the chief of Capitol Police at the time, what's his name, Chief Stephen Sund, the Capitol architect, the D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, her police chief Conti, and then the Secret Service agents that were with Pence himself, the son-in-law of Nancy Pelosi, Michael Voss, John Sullivan, the inner breach team leader, and Ray Epps, the outer breach team leader. And I would also like to have the security guards for the DNC and the RNC that were on duty on the 5th and the 6th, as well as the U.S. Capitol Police officer, Michael Byrd, who murdered Ashley Babbitt, as well as Lila Morris, the Metropolitan Police Department officer that murdered Roseanne Boylan. And then once I have all those folks in the same room with me, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that they may have, not in the Capitol, but in a neutral venue where both the people asking me questions and myself are under oath, so that America can see, uncensored on C-SPAN, for the whole world to see, my 2 weeks of primetime responses.
Wow.
Well, one of the things that you're assuming is that they want to have a fair and open discussion. I mean, the very fact that there has not been cross-examination and there have been so many
bringing me in would allow for that, because every question that they ask, it would probably require me to, I would start off with, that's a great question, but before we begin, hey, Capitol Police officer and sergeant-at-arms, I'm not starting my testimony until you shackle my arms, my hands, and my legs to this chair so that when I make noises coming out of my mouth, no one is scared and offended based on my background. And then I'll go into, continuing to create memes for generations as I, peacefully and patriotically berate every single individual, and oh, by the way, only the unconstitutionally constituted lawmakers are allowed to ask me questions. None of these subaltern staffers, they're just not going to know understand the details of what I'm saying. One, and two, it's so much easier to debate an octogenarian that can barely form a sentence, right?
Absolutely. This would be perfect pay-per-view. I would pay top dollar.
I would see a setup. $1,000.
I would pay to attend myself.
So what was the motivating factor behind what Pence did then? I mean, you go into depth about, who he was aligned with, and you go through a history.
So you're referring back to the Red Pill 78, just the deep dive, right?
Yeah, deep dive. I mean, just with, FISA and all that.
A lot of this is conjecture based on analysis, right? You got to look at this from we want to call indicators and warnings analysis, link analysis between the different players. We use the chronology of different events. And you combine all that together, coupled with just a little bit of just context of being able, because a lot of what I know is based on, almost entirely based on public exaltations by all these individuals, media, and then court documents, right? Court filings. But in addition to that, I probably know some of these key players, right, that are involved and may have kind of bounced some ideas off of them. So it comes down to Mike Pence and his responses to a lot of questions. One is, how well did you know Robert Mueller during your 12 years in Congress on the, you know, 10 of those being on judiciary, the same 12 years that Robert Mueller was the FBI director, you were a Congress member, 10 of those on the judiciary? I think it's safe to assume, it's a strong assumption, unless it can be somehow refuted, that Mike Pence knew Robert Mueller, a judiciary member of the Judiciary Committee, has oversight over the FBI as well as the DOJ. And then the next question is, hey, Mike Pence, was it you that offered up Robert Mueller immediately after James Comey was fired for President Trump? Did you recommend Robert Mueller to Trump to be the director of the FBI? I haven't been able to find anything out about that, but my gut feeling is probably that is the case. And then when Trump refused Robert Mueller to be the FBI director for his first term, right after firing Comey, guess what happened the next day? Rod Rosenstein appoints Robert Mueller as who?
His special counsel.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to rehash the Red Pill 78 interview. I'm going to try to go in a little bit more detail on that. And that's one of the critical things that people need to be asking is, what role did Mike Pence, Rod Rosenstein, right, and all those key individuals that most people consider Bush, Cheney ecosystem, right of center folks, right, of the Uniparty.
Mm-hmm.
What role did they have? And I suspect the more we look into this and the more actions that they're taking, whether it's Durham, whether it's the inactions, I argue it's inactions. Some people say, you know, on the other spectrum, there was another interview that I did with a Patel Patriot. You know, some folks, and I'm not discounting anybody. I just have my thoughts and my analysis. Other folks think that John Durham's doing something based on some of the things that you mentioned with different letters, right? I just don't see any action being taken that is of any consequence there. And then, let's see, with the raid, for example, like all the indications that I see is a massive cover-up after cover-up after cover-up in order for the original transgression not to be exposed. And that original transgression is, I argue, in July 2016, when Pence was foisted on Trump, both sides of the aisle of the Uniparty immediately started the spying on Trump to create leverage over him and his closest allies that were not aligned or loyal to either the Democrat or Republican Party. And who are those individuals? General Flynn, most dangerous. Next up is who? Steve Bannon. Well, actually, before Steve Bannon, it was Roger Stone, right?
Roger Stone, yeah.
And then later on, who was the one in the White House that wrote Immaculate Deception and basically was the first person to really, in an organized fashion, showcase the illegally certified election? Peter Navarro. So everything we've seen to this point kind of leads into one bucket of who you have to answer the question, who benefits the most within the political ecosystem that has any significant power within the judicial ecosystem to delete Bannon, Navarro, Roger Stone, General Flynn, right? I mean, who is it? I argue it's those in the Republican Party that are trying to retake over the party that they lost, if you will, from their perspective, when Trump came in.
Right, the RINOs.
Ryan Priebus, Paul Ryan, Mike Pence, Lindsey Graham as the caretaker of the Judiciary Committee on the Senate side, right?
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell. I mean, I didn't talk about this in the Red Pill, I don't think, but who do you think appointed all 300 of the federal judges?
Oh, that was
Technically, it was Trump, right?
Well, yeah. He's
has to go through Lindsey Graham, through the judiciary, and then whoever is the chair. So I think it was initially, I think it was Lindsey Graham, and then, before
Mitch.
That it was, what's his name? Chuck Grassley. Lindsey Graham, and then you start moving over to the full Senate, which is the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell.
Okay.
And then considering Mike Pence was on the judiciary, right? He's a lawyer himself. I mean, he probably has folks that he wants to tee up to be on the judiciary. So one argument to make is, why did none of those election cases become successful? A lot of people say, oh, it's because, oh, Sidney Powell is bad. Lynn Wood's bad. All these people are bad lawyers, right? No, I argue the complete opposite. The judiciary was the 300 judges that were, quote, Trump judges, some people say. I argue that they were more Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell judges more than anything.
Mm.
I mean, who fought for, fought for Brett to have a beer more than anybody, right? Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember Lindsey Graham?
2.0? Yeah, very
people
passionate.
Like, oh, wow, look at Lindsey coming out. The first time we've ever seen him like that. I wonder what's behind that.
Right.
So there you have it. I mean, the judicial ecosystem runs through the Senate Judiciary Committee. And when I say judicial ecosystem, that's all three branches of government. So number one, the House and Senate Judiciary, and who's more influential, right? It's the Senate Judiciary because they're the ones that get to appoint judges and then the Attorney General for the nomination process, right? They start there based on their jurisdiction,
right?
And that cabinet member, right? Number two is, what about the article? What is it? We talked about the Article II branch of government, DOJ, FBI oversight. But then you look at the Article III branch of government. You have this little known entity known as the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, right?
Yes.
Not only are you kind of providing oversight along with the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, and then your counterparts over in the House, HPSI, which is House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, as well as the House Judiciary Committee, you're kind of being briefed and know what's going on within the FISA court as it applies to the spying on American citizens. Because if you look at the process, you look at some of these public disclosures by the DOJ, IG, that have been made over the years. I mean, the people involved in spying on American citizens are the National Security Division primarily, right, at the FBI, requests due to political reasons who they're going to target mostly, I argue. Then it has to be that warrant needs to be presented before a FISA judge. All FISA court judges have been appointed by Chief Justice John Roberts singularly. And then of the sitting bench of federal judges. And then it goes for execution and actioning by NSA, right? So it would be nice in that entire ecosystem to be able to get a whistleblower. And I think we just presented ourselves with an opportunity today. A couple hours ago, the Chief of Staff for Chief Justice John Roberts just announced he's retiring at the end of the month.
Hmm.
So it'd be nice for you guys to reach out to him. I don't recall his name right now. And see if he would do an interview and ask him what he knows about anything related to the FISA court.
It's a great idea.
I'm probably going to do a little deep dive tomorrow on that, since that just came across the radar.
Wow.
And see how we can't do that. The other component is there's an individual by the name of Joseph Pientka III, if you've been following my Telegram.
Oh, yeah, I have on that.
I try to mention his name every day.
You've been good at it. I've heard it a number of times.
Joseph Pientka III, he's like the invisible FBI agent. I think the Epoch Times wrote an article a year and a half, 2 years ago, the invisible FBI agent. I think he's invisible because, like I said before, I think he might be a white hat in the sense that he tried to do the right thing, but without getting slammed for it. Once he identified the predicate wasn't really there, because Bill Priestap, whom we're going to have a discussion about him in the near future, to expose him a little bit more as it applies to him potentially leveraging his, let's just say, family members to target me. And if you're listening, Bill, we'll get to you. Don't worry. But right now we're focused on Joe Pientka. And when Bill Priestap would not tell Joe what the underlying predicate was for the spying on the Trump campaign through Crossfire, Razor, and Hurricane, He was like, you know what? I think I'm out. I want to be taken off of this case because I want nothing to do with it. And it's documented. So they reassigned him to San Francisco.
That's right. He's in
Lindsey
our area.
Graham as the chair of the... What's that?
He's in our area. We're in Santa Cruz County, which is not far from San Francisco.
I don't know if he's still there, but he was originally reassigned there. Lindsey Graham had him testify, and he didn't really tell the rest of the Judiciary Committee. So that raises a red flag for me in thinking, okay, why would Lindsey Graham do this? Why is it behind closed doors? Why is it, you know, all these questions come up. The only answer that I can think of is Lindsey's covering something up himself. Was Lindsey the one directing, involved, or facilitating that crossfire hurricaning by providing that top cover? You got to remember that you can't fire a vice president as president, but the reverse is true if the cabinet is on board with it. And guess who confirms the cabinet? The Senate. So if if Mitch McConnell and Mike Pence are on board to create the frame so that the majority of the cabinet that is appointed by Trump and confirmed is actually loyal to Pence and McConnell, they are always in a position to pull a 25th Amendment removal. And as we remember, if you've been following this closely, that discussion occurred at least on two occasions with the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein.
Yeah. He would wear a wire, right? Or he said he was joking, but...
That was one of them. Remember Anonymous in New York Times? There's many, many times that occurred, and then Nancy Pelosi wanted to push for it after J6. That's another story, so...
And Pienka also was involved in interviewing Flynn when he was just new
absolutely
to the White House, wasn't he?
So on two occasions, Joe Pienka, August of 2016, he was sent by, Pete Strzok, Andrew McCabe, and Jim Comey. So the FBI director, deputy director, and then one of the senior counterintelligence folks, what's his name? Peter Strzok was Joe Pienka's boss. So Pienka is sent over to Trump Tower in New York to give a defensive counterintelligence briefing to President Trump, Chris Christie, and General Flynn. And in that, this is what the documents say. He was sent out there, the declassified ones, he was sent out there to not only do what's called a defensive counterintelligence briefing. It's essentially briefing folks on the threats that could be happening to the campaign from foreign actors, but also to assess the mannerisms of General Flynn anytime Russia was mentioned. And so if you initially think that the predicate was legitimate, you may think as an agent, there might be something here, so I'm going to go ahead and do this. He does that briefing, but when he comes back, and then he does the interview, he's sent again to the White House with Pete Strzok to do an interview of Flynn. And then he testifies before Lindsey Graham saying that he didn't see any indication of deception by Flynn. And he's basically blocked from writing what is known as his 302, his sworn affidavit of the meeting with Flynn. And then that was in January 24th of 2017, 4 days after inauguration. And then the 302 by Strzok is not released until August. Yet the original Joseph Pienka 302, the sworn affidavit, which is according to FBI policy, you got to write that up within 5 days, that's basically almost nowhere to be found.
Was
and
that
somewhere within that time frame? He talks to Bill Priestap to figure out what's the predicate. He's told that he can't see it, and then that's when he bounces. So based on his actions and what the documents show, it's almost as though he's a white hat. The only reason why I think there's a potential where he's not, is who within the San Francisco field office, or maybe headquarters, but if it was from San Francisco, who contacted Mark Zuckerberg to tell him to go ahead and censor the Hunter Biden laptop story?
Yeah, and that just came out this week, right? Last week.
Remember when good old Marky Mark Zuckerberg told Joe Rogan on an interview last week?
Yep.
That, the FBI contacted us. The first question of any investigative journalist is, okay, name that FBI agent.
Exactly.
Who is it? Was it from the San Francisco field office? Was it Joseph Pienka, if he was still there? And if it was, intriguing. He's, like, involved in everything.
So let's
How about we do a little whistling?
Let's put this together so that we're trying to so the question that you asked is who most benefits. We were putting together the idea that Pence was actually running cover. He had an alternative motive for that the embedded permanent politicians in Washington. Mm-hmm. He's part of the system of the Uniparty, mm-hmm. and that the
right.
that as soon as Trump got in, he was up against every sort of weapon against that these uniparties from both sides. His assumption he had friends on the right, his side, was not a good assumption. And so he was having not only to fight the left, but his own party. And that part of that fight was Mike
Pence.
I think
all the friction started when Mike Pence was foisted on Trump, right? In July of 2016.
Yeah, at the
right around the RNC convention.
Right, the Republican convention.
So basically your theory, or not even theory now, but is that all the way through history of the last 100 years, the deep state has managed to bring in a saboteur to anybody who is far away from the deep state to be able to run alongside, like a Ronald Reagan or...
Right, I mean, in a sense, I hate to say it, it makes sense if you're sitting in their shoes.
Yeah.
They're trying to gain and retain power and influence of people that are leveraged against each other based on, you know, generations of relationships. You know, the Bush dynasty, the Cheney dynasty. And when you break through that, you're going to see massive pushback, right? And Trump saw that, right? Massive pushback.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
But here's the problem for those that have dynasty building relationships. They don't have 80 million people following them on Twitter, right?
Right.
As he did. He literally had the ability to circumvent all institutions, big media, big tech, as long as they weren't censoring him, right? Big media, big tech, and all of the cabinet officials, because he could just put it out in one little, you know, chirp for the entire world to hear and see. That's how fast it would operate. They finally realized it, and that's why they had to cancel him off of Twitter. And guess what that did? That only facilitated, I was trying in June of 2019 to put a deal together where we had essentially a free speech search engine and a free speech social media, and then by extension it would build into kind of what we're seeing today. But we didn't have enough interest of people that have capacity. So now we have to face with, you know, a couple-year delay. But now we have Truth. We have Telegram, right, and all these other, Rumble.
Yeah, we still need a search engine, though, for sure.
Research engine is lacking.
Yeah, definitely. I do research for the show, and I can't find anything that I used to find. I used to find things years ago. I used to put in something, and I would find it. Now, it's whatever MSNBC, you know,
page
CNN.
Seven.
Yeah. Well, even that, though, they repeat the second page all the way to the 100th page.
DuckDuckGo has been good up until the last 6 months, year. And then the other one that isn't there one that was being released right now, Chris? Remind me.
FreeSpoke. I haven't found it very reliable as far as it being up all the time. FreeSpoke is being pushed on Truth Social, and then I use Brave browser, which is
that's my go-to is Brave for now.
Yeah, because that's reliable, and it seems to be uncensored. We've got about 15 minutes, and I am just curious about some things as far as fixing what. You know, it's time to look forward, and I'm not saying we don't take to account what happened in 2020, but what we do need to do is look at 2022, the midterms. Obviously, we need to get out there to vote. There are no excuses not to vote. We need to have eyes on the polls. We need to be working with the MAGA candidates or those that are America First candidates. We need to be aware that we
America
are in
first
a
unit versus China first. Yep.
Yes, yeah. And that we are in a uniparty system, and not just vote the party system, but to vote the really what the values of the candidates are and what they're saying versus just red or blue. I heard an interesting theory about how to stop the machines from cheating, and it was writing in your candidate, because then it would kick it out and they'd have to hand count your vote. And that there was kind of this I heard it just yesterday, they're sending out, hey, what if we all hand wrote in our candidates and all of the votes had to be hand counted?
Wow.
I thought it was brilliant.
Well, I'm glad you teed me up for that. That is absolutely a thing. And if you want to, so we've already kind of broken up the McCain cabal in Arizona with the how well America First candidates did there. We also did the same thing with Wyoming with the Cheney dynasty. Our last standing kind of peg of the stool that we need to remove within the Republican side of a very key influential figure resides in Wisconsin. And his name is Robin Voss. He currently is the Speaker of the House. He somehow pulled off a quote-unquote victory by having 260 more ballots than Adam Steen in the primary August 9th. So there is no Democrat running in November. Hmm. And so Adam Steen is running a write-in campaign against Robin Voss. Reminder, President Trump endorsed Adam Steen, and he's going to re-endorse him, according to my sources, which are very good. And let's just say September 18th, if you're out in Wisconsin, there's going to be an event. I think it might have been announced already. If not, then, well, there you go. And you're going to see, it looks like Mike Lindell is going to be out there and some other folks, probably Justice Gableman, probably some other legislators that you've seen around the Adam Steen campaign.
Hmm.
But, yeah, that's going to be a write-in campaign, and it's going to be interesting because as of earlier today, a Democrat that's run before is also announcing the write-in campaign because originally they weren't going to run.
That's
so
funny.
That could really put us in a position where the machines become irrelevant and more – well, I shouldn't say irrelevant, less relevant, and it's more important for us to volunteer to be election day workers to be able to – supervise the electoral system, because if you leave it up to the communist scum and the these, what do they call them, the
communist scum,
the union workers, right?
Yeah,
to run the electoral system, we're going to get the same thing that we saw in 2020, and then they're going to be those union workers and the C3s that are funded by Marky Mark Zuckerberg, who claims that the FBI told me to censor, and then, well, did the FBI tell you to bribe five cities, elected officials in Wisconsin to steal the election there? I don't think so. So the entire ecosystem has to cover for itself in order to not be in jail in their property seat. That's why they're fighting so hard.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg's always...
Adam Steen in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I was going to say, Mark Zuckerberg always considers himself an overachiever, so I guess maybe he was told to run scrimmage for the FBI or censor, but then he went the next step further. And
he secretly wants to be a spy.
I think he wants to just blame.
Actually, he secretly is a spy.
He wants to blame the FBI. I got a quick question for you. Did you see the video where somebody shook Mike Pence's hand after he had... did the electorate, and they gave him a coin.
That's why they nicknamed him 30 Pence, right?
30 Pence.
Mm. Interesting.
And I think what's more telling is we had this discussion on one of the podcasts, I believe, with Zach of Red Pill. I think what's more telling is that elbow bump by Nancy Pelosi. And I think that, it's more of an indicator of a, hey, good job, we conducted what's called the Pence Pelosi pooch. If you're not familiar with the term pooch, it's the Russian equivalent to a coup d'etat or an overthrow of the government. So yeah. I just figured I'd choose that one since it starts with the letter P.
P for Pelosi.
PPP.
Pence Pelosi pooch.
We'll check that out.
And hey, the CCP.
We actually have a caller. If you're willing to entertain a caller here, we're going to put them on.
Absolutely. Okay. I want somebody that disagrees with me.
Oh, I don't know.
We try to get those, but they don't really. Yeah.
Okay. So we have what is called Pure Heart from Aptos. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm sorry that the disagreement won't be me. I'm enjoying the guest entirely. But if you have a piece of paper and a pencil, I'd suggest a browser you might try, the Yandex browser, Yankee Alpha November Delta Echo X-ray.
But that's Russian disinformation, you know?
Right. Well, maybe
they don't really disinform us on American media. That might be a good point there.
It finds things I could not find before, which disappeared. So it's a good thing to have in your toolbox to find stuff that you know is there but disappeared. It finds it for me. So just a word to the wise, and I'll keep listening.
What was it one more time?
Yandex.
Yandex? Okay.
Yandex. So
I'll check that out.
Yeah, of course, you have to be aware of what you're saying, but it finds things which have disappeared for me.
Absolutely. You know what? We have show notes on wakethebearradio.com. I'm going to have actually every one of Ivan's links that he wants, and I'll have that one on there as well. So if you visit that tomorrow, we'll have the show on with all those links. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your calling.
Thanks, Pure Heart.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, we often get some people calling in that disagree. We really just try to find them, and often they just can't keep a coherent discussion and argument going on. So,
yeah, it's pretty tough. We try. We try to make it easy for them by listening.
It's past the bedtime.
Now, one of the things that I like to do, because I go to quite a few events, is, and then usually have the radical domestic terrorist leftist reporters out there, and they're easy to identify because they have one mask. And then I usually, you know, ask them, why aren't you wearing two or three masks, right? But the key there is their role is to discredit and try to make us look like fools. When you beat them to it, it's glorious because they start to run like cockroaches. And I usually try to record that and post it on my Telegram just for entertainment value. But for those that actually stick around and listen, you try to mentor them and educate them on things that they haven't seen because they're in their own echo chamber, right?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're basically trying to break open their bubble a little bit. Hey, we got another caller. Do you want to take another call here, Ivan?
Yeah, I'll stick around as long as you need me, yeah.
Okay, let's do that. This one is Bill from Monterey. Bill, you're on the air.
Yeah, it was my understanding that Bill Clinton had fired all the U.S. attorneys and brought in his own people. Now, did Trump do that?
So you bring up a good point, sir. One thing to keep in mind regarding U.S. attorneys is that the longest-standing U.S. attorney was the U.S. attorney for Maryland by the name of Rod Rosenstein. I think ever in the history of U.S. attorneys, he was the longest-standing attorney. I think it was 10 or 12 years, which, I mean, to me, the immediate thing that I think of is deep state much. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing to consider on that front for U.S. attorneys, because remember, he was the deputy attorney general who ended up doing the Mueller thing and then was involved in the potential 25th Amendment option, discussions with wearing a wire, et cetera. But in addition to that, he was what? He was a law school section mates with Anthony Scaramucci.
Small family.
And now it kind of makes sense of why Anthony Scaramucci quickly turned. Remember, he turned against Trump after he got axed, essentially?
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder if it has anything to do with his relationship with Rod Rosenstein.
Wow.
Well, there
you go.
To answer your question, sir, usually, normally when a new president comes in, that is standard practice to kind of remove everybody that's been appointed, particularly ambassadors and then particularly U.S. attorneys, and then they start from scratch. And he was the only, Rosenstein was the only holdover from Obama.
Now, wasn't Dirk meeting with the grand jury as far as bringing facts out on what was going on, or no? What's happening with that?
It was hard to understand. Grand jury with which grand jury?
Durham's. Durham's grand jury. He was supposed to be bringing charges or people up on the grand jury.
For the indictments, the sealed indictments.
I think you said, you're referring to John Durham, I think you said?
Yeah.
Durham, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going to have you off. We're just closing, so I'll let Ivan answer this.
Yeah, so my stance on John Durham is kind of what I mentioned earlier in the show here. I just see him as another cog in the wheel, just slow rolling, using the Bunsen burner analogy that I mentioned during my previous podcast, meaning that there's a mechanism at play, it seems like, within the DOJ that when they need to, for the court of public opinion, make it look like they're doing something so that it puts people at ease and then it simmers from a boil, the court of public opinion, so that people aren't riled up to make it look like justice is being served. Meanwhile, all it is just a delay tactic. And I get it. I pray that I'm wrong. I pray that he goes ahead and prosecutes every single person listed thus far, from James Comey to, what's his name, Andrew McCabe, to Peter Strzok, to Lisa Page, to Bill Priestap, to, what's his name, Baker. All these guys at the DOJ and the FBI that spied and lied from 2016 onward, and all the way up to including, you know, your Lindsey Grahams and your Mike Pences, if the investigation leads us there, that would be great. But I haven't seen any evidence that he's doing that. They're going after the source that Richard Steele used, the guy's name is Danchenko, to then prosecute him. Okay, great. It's been, what, 3.5 years? How many prosecutions have we heard and seen from good old unlimited sourced John Durham? Zero.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Have we seen of MAGA supporters peacefully entering and conducting First Amendment activities inside a building? Oh, I don't know, 800? So when you juxtapose it and compare it to that, I think it's, to me, it's clear that it's just a slow roll, just like A.G. Brnovich did with his slow roll in Arizona, the attorney general there for election fraud.
Right.
And there's many instances where there's just a slow roll going on for, you know, once the pressure's so high for political expediency, they make it look like they're doing something. Just like Robin Voss did with appointing Justice Gableman. People are like, oh, great, he's going to do something. No, he's just slow rolling.
Hey, Ivan, we've got about a minute. We have about a minute and 10 seconds. Closing thoughts as we close, because we're on
a message of hope.
Yeah. What's your message of hope? You got
about a minute. There's no hope. I mean, I need everybody to get, I need everybody to get in their uncomfort zone and essentially take this country back.
Amen.
Do what you can based on what you can do.
That's right.
And if you're saying someone else needs to do something, you need to figure out how you can do that part that you're expecting someone else to do.
Yeah, think
do it yourself.
Think globally, act
and
locally.
Motivate others to do the same thing.
Yeah, we got to get busy. We got to get busy up being poll workers, poll watchers. We got to do our part to change the direction. Well, we just pray for blessing upon.
Guidance, you can go to my Substack, or you can go to my Linktree/Raquel.
Yeah,
right?
Check out Ivan's Substack.
We will, and we'll have all that in the show notes too. All the links. Hey, thanks so much, Ivan.
Yeah.
It was an informative night.
Bless you.
I appreciate it. It's great. Thank you.
Huh? God bless.
Good night now.
God bless him. Protect him, Lord. Protect the Patriots.
This has been Wake the Bear Radio on KSCO, 1080 on your AM dial.